Good day, and welcome to today's AHA Hospitals Against Violence webinar on Project Ujima, Changing Lives by Reducing the Reoccurrence of Violence for Victims of Violence. Please note that the presentation portion of today's call is being recorded. All audience lines will be in a listen-only mode during the program. Our speakers will address the web and phone questions at the conclusion of today's presentation. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Bonnie Connors-Jones. Please go ahead.
Oh, thank you so much, Ashley, our operator, and we appreciate your help today. And to everybody else out there, I would say welcome. Welcome today to the AHA Section for Maternal and Child Health, the American Hospital Association Section for Maternal and Child Health, but also in total conjunction with our partners within the American Hospital Association, working on the Hospital Against Violence Initiative. And I'll give you a little bit more information about that as we go forward. For today's webinar, we're featuring Children's Hospital of Wisconsin. We're very honored to do so. This project, Project Ujima, and other things that are happening in Milwaukee, it's a longstanding project, 20 years in the making. We are privileged to have the founder of the program here with us today on the line. We're so appreciative of the distinguished clinical and staff leaders that you all are that are joining us today for this webinar. As Ashley said, my name is Bonnie Connors-Jellin. I am the director of the Section for Maternal and Child Health at the American Hospital Association. Some of you might have joined us last year. You remember in April of 2017, we featured Lurie Children's Hospital in Chicago and their efforts related to community violence. All this happens, as I said, under the umbrella of the American Hospital Association's Hospital Against Violence effort. This is a board level, board of trustees of the AHA level effort. It's been going on for a couple of years as well for obvious reasons. The goal is to combat violence in our workplace as well as in our communities. And before I turn over to my speakers, I'd like to give you a little bit of a backdrop and urge you to participate in the AHA effort related to hospitals against violence. And I'll ask you to explore the AHA website and specifically just type in, go to www.aha.org and type in hospitals against violence. And what you'll find there is a couple of years of experience of webcast, not just related to maternal and child health, but webcasts and case examples, best practices, and so forth. And I'd like to ask you also to participate. And just by virtue of being on this call or being registered for this webinar, you know, we will push out to you information about our second annual Have Hope Day, a day of awareness. We did this last year in June. We'll do it again this year on Friday, the June 8th. And those on the call have the opportunity to receive our sort of campaign materials, if you will, including a sign and other information. What we've had great success last year in 2017 is asking hospitals to bring together their principals, their champions, their staff, their community workers, and so forth, and stand for a picture, send it in to us. And it really just gives a grand example of how many hospitals across the country are working both on issues around hospitals against violence, both, as I said, that violence that may occur within the hospital and ways to protect your employees, your staff, et cetera, your patients, and then just community-wide efforts, which is what we'll be discussing today. So with that, I will tell you to keep your questions. Feel free to, of course, add them into type them into your computer so that we can see them and I can, as your moderator, get them answered for you. Additionally, if need be or if must be, we'll go to a telephone line as well, and Ashley, our operator, will help us with that. But at this point in time, I have the great privilege, with no further ado, to turn you over to Bridget Clemente, from Children's Hospital of Wisconsin. She'll be followed by Dr. Marlene Meltzer, and they'll be telling us about a 20-year history of Project UGMA and other ways that they are partnering in their community to combat violence and to help victims of violence to not be recurring victims of violence. So with that, Bridget, am I good to go to turn it over to you?
Very good. Thank you so very much, Bonnie. Excuse me. Hello and welcome to all of you who have joined us on the webinar today. The picture that is in front of you today is not exactly how Milwaukee looks this time of year. We're still coming out of winter, and so our trees are not nearly as green, but at least the picture gives you an idea of some of the beauty across our community. Oops. Bonnie, I'm having a little trouble advancing the slide.
Does that help?
Yep. I might have to rely on you to advance them. For some reason, I'm not able to advance them, so we'll work through that as we go.
Okay.
The learning objectives for today you will see on the screen. I will be spending, as Bonnie mentioned, the first few minutes of our time together just laying some foundation, describing the experience of violence, providing a little bit of history, and then really turn it over to our founder, Dr. Marlene Meltzer Lang, who will really get into the deep understanding of the program components and the innovative approaches and some of our key findings. And then we both look forward to your questions and answers as we move forward. There we go. I think I'm good now. Thank you, Bonnie.
Okay, great.
So I thought it might be helpful for each of you to have an understanding that we are more than just a hospital. We have over a century of service across our community. We are known as Children's Hospital of Wisconsin, but we have a number of primary and specialty care clinics that are under our brand and within our hospital and health system. We have dental and medical, mental health services, foster care and adoption, certainly community health and education, and unlike maybe other hospitals, we really reach across our state of Wisconsin, where we have 40-plus locations across the state that represent all of that aforementioned work. And like many children's hospitals, our vision is that Wisconsin's kids be the healthiest kids in the nation. And when we take the time to describe what does health look like, or what do we mean by that when we say that we want Wisconsin's kids to be the healthiest in the nation, we really look at a very broad definition of health and have been looking at that broad definition of health for many years. We do believe, as the World Health Organization, that health is truly the state of physical, mental, social well-being and not merely the absence of disease or infirmity. And with that being said, like many other hospitals across the nation, we believe deeply in and recognize there are many social determinants of health that are far beyond the clinical experiences that we have within either our emergency department or even within our specialty care areas across our health system. So as we lean into the social determinants of health and understand the impact of that within our community and certainly within our patients and families in which we serve, we want to acknowledge and recognize what health outcomes look like for children and families across our Milwaukee community. Now, as I mentioned, we do work across the state, but Project UGMA is one of those programs that does concentrate on Milwaukee County with a heavy emphasis on the city of Milwaukee. So we thought it would be helpful for you to understand a little bit about our community. Milwaukee is one of the most impoverished cities in the United States. It is an incredibly segregated city, and children are living in deep poverty. Children living in poverty, as many of us know and appreciate, are seven times more likely to have poor or fair health outcomes. As mentioned earlier about the social determinants of health and recognizing that while the city of Milwaukee is home to many of the state's wealthiest residents, it is also home to a great majority of the poorest residents. And those social determinants of health show up in so many different areas, from financial stress to adult substance abuse, which is oftentimes happening in the homes in which these children are living, to adult and child mental health, and, of course, neighborhood safety. these are all factors, as many of us know and appreciate, that do negatively impact, or positively, depending on the statistics, the health outcomes of children within our community. And more specifically to violence and to the topic at hand today, Milwaukee has struggled for years to really improve the violence and the crimes across our neighborhoods and across the community. In this most recent year, I was an active part of a steering committee that helped, in partnership with residents across the community, develop the Blueprint for Peace. The City of Milwaukee has a commitment to reducing violence across our community. They have defined violence as a very broad topic. And so these are a few of the statistics on your screen today of some of the motivating factors that went into the Blueprint for Peace, along with our own hospital's community health needs assessment. So you can see here that violence is an issue that many across the community identify, and this is the first time that violence has identified as a top community health issue with our community health needs assessment. In fact, 42% of the respondents that were surveyed for our community health need assessment identified violence as a significant issue in our community. And so recognizing that it is an issue and recognizing that violence can greatly impact a child's health outcome, we have the great pleasure to lead a program and a project called Project GEMA. And as Bonnie had mentioned, we are really honored to have Dr. Melzer Lang here with us today, who founded the program and will be sharing with you many of the program components and how we really do believe that it is redefining and redesigning healthcare systems to improve health outcomes for children. So, Marlene.
Thanks, Bridget. So I want you to think about violence across the lifespan, and in many of your hospitals, I am sure that you deal and care for many patients from the time before they're even born until they become very elderly, and in each of those life stages, there is violence that unfortunately happens. Intimate partner violence is especially prevalent during pregnancy. And the fetus, of course, witnesses that as well. Child abuse, which are other areas that Children's Hospital addresses in different ways. And then starting in childhood and adolescence, we see bullying, we see community violence, youth violence. We also see some cyberbullying, dating violence, and gang violence and gun violence. That is fairly prevalent from about age 7 up until, you know, into the 30s, and certainly is the great number of the homicides in our community are between 16 and 25, mostly young men. Suicide, of course, is a self-directed violence. I want you to think about that, though our program does not address that. And then intimate partner violence, again, and elder abuse. Many of these are related, too, in that the families that are dealing with one type of this violence in early childhood may be also seeing it happening in their children as they become adolescents. All of these things have health consequences throughout life. And from the ACEs, the ACE study, the adverse childhood event, Fulgetti et al. Did, that showed that people in their 50s who had a past high ACE score or adverse childhood event were suffering higher levels of diabetes, hypertension, obesity, and early death medically, not from, you know, a gunshot wound, is one good example. Certainly repeat injuries are an example. Non-communicable diseases, like I just mentioned, stroke and hypertension, the green that's on this slide, mental health issues, and then risk-taking issues such as STDs or alcohol and drug problems. We also know that victims of violence have special concerns that healthcare providers and hospitals need to be aware of. On the left side of this slide, you can see many of the what we would call physical kind of things, the initial recovery from their physical injuries, poor medical follow-up, perhaps because their insurance has lapsed or they may not have transportation to their medical appointments. They're certainly at high risk for a repeat physical injury and for premature death. In one study, second-time violent injured people in an adult facility had a 44% chance of dying within 5 years, so very high risk for premature death. On the right side of your slide, you can see many of the psychosocial problems. So an acute stress reaction, post-traumatic stress, that after 30 days of an injury that can continue to have stress, the violent injury may precipitate aggressive or avoiding injuries and behaviors. They may have poor school or job attendance. They may not graduate from school at all, and they may have chronic illness into their adulthood, even if their initial injury was well treated. They may have long-standing chronic illness due to their injury. So I want to talk about Jason. Jason was a child who we saw in around 1994. He was 12 years old when he was brought to our emergency department for injuries after a fight. At 14, he suffered a gunshot wound to his leg, and at 15, due to a recurrent injury, he was shot and he died in our trauma room. Jason was the precipitating reason that Project UGMA started. It was in 1995 when we had a very high rate of firearm victims in our city and, in fact, in our hospital when the triage to our traumas was age 15 from the pre-hospital providers. We had 160 firearm injuries in 1 year, which is very, very high for a children's hospital. Next. So let me give you a little overview of our program. We are community-based, we're multidisciplinary, and we're collaborative, and we really address both youth and adult community interpersonal violence. We're committed to stopping the recurrence of violence as much as we can and to also prevent violent injuries in the first place in our community. We're a collaborative effort. So I'm an employee, a faculty on the Medical College of Wisconsin, and as a clinician, I'm a pediatric ER doctor. So I work within the Children's Emergency Department, Children's Hospital, Wisconsin Community Services oversees the program, and all of the staff are employed through Children's Hospital. It's also a community partnership. There's very important. I want to emphasize that you want to have community leaders and community nonprofits within your city that can partner with you. Obviously, the City of Milwaukee helps us, the Milwaukee Public Schools. We have a group called the Milwaukee Homicide Commission that measures firearm injuries and also other homicides in our city, and we can partner with them as well. Over the years, we have partnered with a variety of local community-based organizations when we found that we had certain needs to meet for our youth. So we serve currently two different groups of populations. For the youth group, we serve children who are age 7 to 18 who are victims of peer-to-peer violence, who come to our emergency department for their initial injury. And the groups that we serve there are intentional injuries. So it may be a school fight. It may be beating on a school bus or on a city bus. A lot of things happen after school. Maybe a firearm injury. We do not serve child abuse victims or suicide attempts or peer violence within the home because there are other systems within our hospital and our community that serves those particular groups. That's the first group of people that we serve. Subsequent, since about 2004, we also provide adult services to people who are referred from the Milwaukee Homicide Review Commission. Now, sadly, these are people who have died. We are serving their next of kin. You might want to ask, why would a children's hospital be serving adult people? And the reason is partly because of our funding. Part of our funder is from the Victim of Crime Assistance Department of Justice at the state of Wisconsin. They requested that we take on this group of clients because they felt we were doing a good job with the youth, so I can brag a little bit. What we found, though, is that, in fact, we are serving a lot of young women and their children because most of the victims who are killed in Milwaukee are young men, and many of them have significant others and their children. And so as it works out, we're serving a lot of children and young women. The average family that we have in Project Ujima is involved for about 15 months. So how does it work? So a child comes to our emergency department. The triage nurse notifies the social worker, or the social worker notices the chief complaint on our tracking board and then goes to see the family. Fortunately, we have social work coverage pretty much 24 hours a day, with an in-house being from 7 in the morning until around midnight. And usually the social workers will stay a little bit later for kids if they come a little bit later. The social worker will determine that the person is eligible for our project and then page the Project Ujima community liaison who's on call. That person comes in and meets the family, talks with the child, and then does some crisis intervention, because one of the things we want to make sure of is that there's not seeking of revenge for the injury that the child has sustained, which is sometimes a fairly normal, natural human response to want to get the person who hurt your child. And it may be brothers and sisters, or it may be the parents who need that crisis intervention. This is another way to prevent future violence. Once the child goes home, and 80% of our clients do go home, the family is followed up within 48 hours with a home visit within 30 days. At that point, a care plan is developed. An assessment is made, a baseline quality of life assessment is made, and then services are provided depending on what the child needs. And it's very tailored to each individual child, but it includes an emphasis on medical follow-up and on keeping the child in school. Those are two elements that we're very dedicated to providing. Once the child is stabilized, the youth then goes into the youth development programs, which may include a boys or girls group that meets during the school year, or a summer day camp that's 6 week long that happens all summer. And that works out very well for many of the families. So we have hospital-based services. Some of the children that are admitted to the hospital will be here for a while, especially if they sustained a significant gunshot wound. Some of our children have been here as long as 6 weeks sometimes in rehabilitation, and our community liaisons do their best to meet with that child every day if the family would like. And there are many children where families are not able to visit them all the time, so our community liaison coming to support them is really much looked forward to by the youth. We have home-based services, which include home visitation. We have a nurse who can meet with the child, as well as our community liaison, and then some community-based services. Since many of the arguments and assaults happen in schools, our community liaisons do make school visits, meet with the counselor or the principal or the social workers there, and try to figure out a plan. In some cases, if a child's been chronically bullied, we may need to help the parents and the school develop a plan to move that child to a different school. And then we also do a lot of community and professional education, kind of like what we're doing today. So let me show you some statistics. In 2017, we had 338 crime victims, and you can see the colored bars on the top. What I'd like to emphasize is the squares of the little people, and you can see that those golden people, those are ones that we saw in the emergency department where we physically saw them. And those are much more likely to take on our services. Overnight, we do not have community liaisons on call to come in because we found, first off, we don't have enough people to do that, but second off, it would cause a lot of staff burnout. But third off, or probably first off, parents are not interested in waiting, especially overnight when they're tired. And so when we see people, we still get a referral from the social worker, and we contact the family on the next business day. But many times those families haven't met us and are reluctant to take on services. So it's really important to meet the child in person in the emergency department to be as successful at attracting your families into a program like this. So let's talk a little bit about the impact and the value of our program. We have, over the years, looked at different measures. A few years ago now, we looked at repeat injuries as a measure. We had a group of children who did not receive our services, and we had a group of children who did. And we found that the children who did not receive our services had our 8% recurrence rate of a violent injury where we knew about it, where they came back to our emergency department, versus the young people who had our services where there was about a 1% repeat injury rate. Currently, we are serving about 300 youth and 500 adults each year, and we're very family-centered. We feel that in order for the young person to heal, we have to heal their family, brothers and sisters, best friends, parents, grandparents, whoever their caregivers are. We know that we have decreased financial costs to treat and hospitalize assault victims because we're preventing the very expensive injuries. Gunshot wounds are very expensive because you need the trauma room, the operating room, the intensive care unit. And for each one that we save, we know that we're saving a lot of dollars there. And I do believe one of our outcomes, and it's hard to measure, is compassionate care in the emergency setting for community victims of violence. And I think that is one of the things that, as a hospital system, each of you should think about is how are you serving these kind of people currently because they do need our help. Now, on the bottom of this slide, there's a picture, and this is a picture of a group of young people who participated in summer camp. Summer camp is about 60 kids, 7 to 18, and then all of our staff, and then invited people. We started doing some quality of life measures. And by we, I mean Dr. Mike Levis, who is one of my pediatric ER colleagues. He started measuring quality of life for these children. So on this next slide, I'm going to show you the change in the PEDS-QL score. PEDS-QL is a validated quality of life score, and it looks at different domains. And what you're seeing here is the change in points of for different elements, school, social, emotional, psychosocial, and physical in the total. And then you can also see that for the emotional and psychosocial, it was statistically significant changes. So that we did a baseline quality of life at the beginning of camp, and then we did a second one at the end of camp, and we had even – though the camp was only 6 weeks long, we had improvements in the PEDS-QL scores. Just really, really, I think, a good measure to use for these young people. So I'd like to talk a little bit about resources. for reducing violence in your community, what sort of things can you do? One of the things is to work with your community to plan solutions. Certainly as a hospital, you can't be in a silo. You have to reach out to your communities. I'm sure you all know that. On your sideline, you can always mentor a young person, bring in people who into your workspace potentially and mentor them or mentor them at home. There are many nonprofits that would love to have you do that. You are likely having young families within your hospital, and so support them in nonviolent discipline methods because we know that early childhood parenting does affect how children react and how they feel as adolescents. You also want to look at anti-bullying in your schools and programs that you might even do in your hospital. You can also advocate in the legislature for laws that reduce gun violence, sort of hot topic right now, but one that we just need to persist with. And certainly support victims of violence through crime victim services, including mentoring. These are all things that you can do. I'd like to tell you also about another organization, the National Network of Hospital-Based Violence Intervention Programs. Project Ujima is one of two founding members, founders of this program. I have the website up there for you. This group provides resources for hospitals, has a lot of information on their website if you're interested in looking at how to start a program in your hospital. There's also mentoring for programs and a wonderful annual conference that will provide workshops for leaders and community workers. The conference this year is in Denver, and it'll be in the fall. And I'm sure there's some information on the website about it. So this is a group that we have found has been very useful in comparing notes and looking at things like funding and in looking at ways that you can integrate such a program within your hospital. So I'd like to thank you all very much. This is our whole team here. And there's some interlopers in the team. We had a group from London visit us last September, and so a couple of those folks are actually running a program called Red Thread in London, but the majority of them are Project Ujima staff. Thanks so much for calling in.
Oh, thank you so much. How inspirational. As we're getting ready to close, I think what I'd just like to say is, I'm very impressed, more than impressed. And I've been in conversation with our two faculty members today for months in any case. But nonetheless, I couldn't say that you couldn't have done a better job. It's very passionate and it's very exciting. And you have a long track record and kudos. The only last thing I would just say to you is just another pitch for the Have Hope Day of Awareness on June the 8th. It's a Friday. And anybody who's on the line, and then actually we'll push it out far more than that. But we're happy to give you our campaign materials and so forth and give you the due recognition that you deserve, in terms of bringing your staff together for a quick photo, put it on our website, shoot it out to members of Congress and otherwise. And so thank you so very much. And with that, unless our faculty has something else to say, I might hand it back to Ashley to close out.
Thank you. And that concludes today's conference. We thank you all for your participation, and you may now disconnect.